But right now, it's always fun talking basketball with our next guest, Eric Hazeltine, the voice of the Memphis Grizzlies, joining us. Eric, I know it's been a busy day for you. Welcome back to the show.
Johnny, it's been, you know, it's a typical June, late June afternoon when you're not in the playoffs. So, but yeah, a little crazy, but hopefully it's going to turn out to be a good night.
So there's options, and first of all, if Memphis stays at number four, they're excited as far as the organization, I'm assuming, that they're going to be able to get a young talent to help this organization move forward. At the same time, you hear about all the potential trade offers that are out there, and you hear the name Chandler Parsons could be involved as well. What's the latest from your standpoint?
Well, I think that's, unless you're getting a contract back in return, and if you have to get somebody in return that's going to help you, that trade doesn't make as much sense as seemingly it would, you would think. People look at it and go, well, you've had a guy for 2 years that you signed to an enormous amount of money, and he hasn't been able to really play because his body has let him down. He's done all the rehab. He's tried to practice. He's tried to go, and he just can't do it. You know, whether people want to be critical on that for the organization for taking a swing at that, I understand that. But the problem is that unless you take money back, you have to find a team that has the salary cap room to absorb that hit, and they're just simply not there. There's six of them, and they're not going to take the contract off your hands just to move up to four. So unless you're talking about either a swap of players with similar salaries, and then swapping draft picks for some of the teams behind the Grizzlies, that's probably not in the cards. I mean, you probably just have to take your medicine and realize Chandler Parsons is going to be on the Grizzlies roster for two more years and hope that his body can heal and then he can help you. So the other trade options are basically rooted in you had a select amount of guys that you have circled, and if the majority of those guys are off the board, are gone, then you're concerned. Then you're not concerned. You're saying, okay, well, do we like one of the other guys so much more than, you know, maybe our second tier, our highest guy on the second tier, that we wouldn't want to get an extra pick? So let's say, for example, if Chicago was so enamored with someone that was not off the board at four that they wanted to give up 7 and 22, would that behoove the Grizzlies? Well, if the guy that they think that they would like at four would still be on the board at seven, in their opinion, then you can take your swing. But my philosophy is this: if you really love a guy that much, then you got to go get him. You know, I understand, like, people go and say, oh, you can't draft this guy at that point. You can't draft this guy at that point. And that's what was told to the Grizzlies way back when they had the second overall pick, and everybody said, you can't take Steph Curry at number two, and even though some of the guys in the front office really like Steph Curry.
Right.
Well, that would have looked like a pretty good pick at number two as opposed to Hasheem Thabeet, right? So the thing about the draft is it's a total roll of the dice. As much as the experts think they know, and as much as there are always quote unquote the sure thing, the not so sure thing, and yeah, they've been right. LeBron James was a sure thing, but they were wrong when Greg Oden wasn't a sure thing because his body failed him. He would have been, but he didn't stay healthy, and that's something you can't contend for. Hasheem Thabeet had size and athleticism that you can't teach at 7'3", but he didn't have the desire to be a great basketball player that you need to separate yourself in this league. So there's a lot of variables that come into play. So if I'm the Grizzlies, and obviously their front office is a little bit on the hot seat, you have the four pick. If the offer is such that you feel like you are going to benefit by having, say, two first-round picks and a high second, then make the trade if you don't really love what's it for. If the offer is such that you feel like, you know, it's not good enough, then take what's it for. And even if it's a player like a Mo Bamba or Jaren Jackson, who supposedly wouldn't give the Grizzlies their medicals, didn't want an interview, didn't want them to take them, have made that very clear, ask yourself this question. Is this a multiple choice draft where you get to pick where you go, or do you go where you were picked? The answer is you go where you were picked. And if you don't want to play, I've yet to meet a guy that wants to sit out and lose $5, $6 million just because he doesn't seemingly like where he's going to go, because in their eyes, they've already got a player at that position, and that's just silly. So I think you take the best young talent available, unless you feel like the guy that is as good at four or at seven as it is at four or at six is at four or at eight is at four, and you can get them there, then maybe you consider the trade possibilities.
From what you understand, why would Jaren Jackson not want to be drafted by Memphis?
I understand both Jaren and Mo Bamba's logic, to be honest with you. If you're Jaren Jackson, you understand that Atlanta is enamored with you, okay? And if you're not going to go to Atlanta because they're going to make a trade for Luka Doncic with maybe Dallas. Dallas supposedly really is, over the top on Luka Doncic, but maybe that's a smokescreen. Then you basically say, okay, well, I shouldn't be on the board at four, but if I am, and that is the case, and I would rather play in Orlando or I would rather play in Dallas. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, his father has some ties to Orlando, if I'm not mistaken. I know he played in the league, but he's tight with Mike Miller, so I'm not sure if Jaren Sr. played there or not. But maybe that's just because you're trying to, force to where you want to go. And you look at the situation also as one where you need to play to get better. And if you are not going to be on the floor with Marc Gasol at the same time, that's probably leaving you about 16 minutes a night in the games Marc played. And if you look back at how many Marc played last year, that number would be closer to 80 had the Grizzlies not said, okay, on second nights of a back-to-back in the last month of the season, you're not playing. He still, I believe, played over 70 games. So you're basically telling a kid you're going to sit the bench for most of the year and watch. And these kids want to go to a situation where they can play. And he thinks in Atlanta or in Orlando, he'll see more time on the court. It's the same thing with Mo Bamba. Mo Bamba's looking at it, if I don't go to Atlanta and I have the choice between Memphis or Dallas, and I can play right away in Dallas and it's right down the road from where I went to college, a little bit down the road, but, not exactly around the corner, but still a huge contingency of Texas fans, I would rather be in that situation. Also, both of those situations seemingly have better opportunities for off-court marketing abilities, especially in Dallas for Mo Bamba. So I get it, but I also really appreciate what a Marvin Bagley said when he said, hey, look, I've worked my whole life to get to the NBA. On the night before I get there, I'm not going to start getting nitpicky about what team I'm going to play for. I'm going to play my hardest, and down the road, if there's another place I want to be, then we'll explore it then. But as far as tonight, I want to go as high in the draft as I possibly can, and that's, to me, the attitude that I prefer. Because I think if you roll the dice with those kids, Johnny, they're taking a big risk. You and I have seen plenty of drafts that have not gone exactly to script and where a kid slides from 4 or 5 to 8 or 9. And when you've told other teams between 4 and 5 and 8 or 9 that you're not even interested, and they say, okay, well, if you're not interested, we're not taking you, that costs you now in nowadays game, $4, $5, $6 million. I know it's over a 3-year period, but that's a lot of money.
I mean,
I don't care what your endorsement deals are. I don't know that you're getting $4, $5, $6 million per year in endorsements because you played in one market as opposed to another. So, the best example I can ever give of that is Paul Pierce. Nobody expected Paul Pierce to be the 10th pick of the 1998 draft, but all of a sudden Larry Hughes went in front of him. Jason Williams, known as White Chocolate, went to the Sacramento Kings,
right,
when a lot of people thought they would take Paul Pierce. We saw Vince Carter and Anton Jameson go back-to-back at 4 or 5, and Rafe LaFrance went at 3, and Paul Pierce is sitting around going, what's going on here? And he ends up in Boston, and they never worked him out. But they weren't afraid to go, hey, we don't care if we didn't work you out, and if you told us you didn't want to come for a workout because you didn't think you'd be on the board, that's great. You're on the board now, and you're coming to play here, and now his jersey's going to hang in the rafters.
I mean, the bottom line is Jaren Jackson at his age, I mean, has he even turned 19 yet? I mean, he may not even know what he wants at this age. And then when he gets the opportunity, and yes, I understand he doesn't want to back up anybody, but certainly if he's talented enough, I'm sure the Grizzlies can find a way where both Gasol and Jaren Jackson could be on the court at the same time.
I think so. And I think in today's game where it's positionless basketball, I wouldn't rule out Trae Young either. You know, once upon a time, Golden State had a combo guard, but he was more handling the ball, named Monte Ellis. And he was scoring 24 points a night, and he was near the top of the league in steals. And Golden State took a guy named Steph Curry and said, we'll see if we can't play them together. And if not, we'll rotate the minutes, and they'll both play 30-31. And, on nights where one can't go, they play more. That seemingly worked out for them, because what they ended up finding out after that was they went and drafted a shooting guard, small forward, and Klay Thompson, and had an abundance of players, and Monte Ellis had trade value. So for Jaren Jackson at this age, these kids are so much further advanced in terms of their understanding of the NBA market and their marketability and their personal brand overall. But a kid like that, because his father played in the NBA, may know just a smidge more than you think, but there's a lot of kids now that understand this. This is not, you know, an abnormal situation to have someone understand the business side of the NBA. Because now with the salaries, what they are, these kids hire agents, and they get to them very, very quickly. And so, you know, at 18, 19, does he really know what he wants now? Because even though these kids have grown up in a very exclusive world and grown up in a different way than your average 18, 19-year-old young American male has, they still are 18 or 19 years old, and they still are going to be faced with some things about growing up that you just can't, no matter how prepared you are or how mature you are, you just can't be ready for.
Michael Porter, a name that he could go early or he could go later, you know, so anywhere from the second pick to 11th or 12th pick. Your thoughts on Michael Porter out of Missouri?
I'm telling you right now, I love the kid if he's healthy. People are very scared of back injuries. And again, this is another one where I wonder how much of this is a smokescreen from his camp to get him to a city where they think his game fits better.
Right.
Which, again, I think is a dangerous game for agents to play, because you may think his game fits in. Let's say they're trying to force him into a situation with the LA Clippers. Let's just put it there. Like, get him to drop out of the top 10, get down to the Clippers, and they'll draft him there, and he'll go to LA, and he'll flourish under Doc Rivers. What happens if Doc Rivers gets fired at the end of next year? And now you get a coach that wants to run high pick and roll, and he's not able to do that as a 6'10 wing. Is that the right situation for him? No. You get him somewhere where he gets the most opportunity and the most money as best you can, and then at that point, I think you worry about fit later. So I wonder about the back issue. He said he felt as good as he had since high school. Now we're hearing he had a twinge in his hip and he couldn't get out of bed. A lot of this is just so ridiculous. What I know is the guy can score. He can flat-out score the basketball. But the one knock I think that was best said by Chauncey Phillips was, we haven't seen him enough against top-tier competition to really know if that's going to translate. It's one thing to score 37 points a game in high school, and I'm sure his high school out of Seattle played a lot of tournaments and things like that. He's played on the national circuit, but it's different playing in AAU than it is in a structured game. And it's not that AAU is not structured, or, you know, these, you know, camps aren't structured. They are not like a regular game, though, not where you're running the framework of an offense and not trying to showcase somebody per se. So that's the one concern. If it's me, here's what I would tell you. I'd have no problem whatsoever if the Grizzlies even rolled the dice on him at number four. The fans might, because he may indeed may not be able to play at all next year. And that's, to me, that's okay, because if the reward at the end is what happened with Joel Embiid, then great. But you also look at a situation like Greg Oden, and people had heard, hey, he might have some serious injury concerns, and you got to be careful. And the Blazers took him, and they have egg on their face because of it. So, again, never an exact science, but he seemingly is all the things the modern NBA is. 6'10", 6'11", long wingspan, athletic, can shoot the ball from the outside, interchangeable on defense, and I like that. And so let's say you did trade down to 7 and he's on the board. I would consider grabbing him if another guy you aren't enamored with is there. And, you know, whether they like Trae Young, whether they like Wendell Carter, whether they like any of these other guys that could be there, Kevin Knox, you know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, whatever it may be, Colin Sexton, I think Michael Porter, being talked about as the potential number one overall pick in this draft for the last 2 years, shouldn't necessarily just fall out of the top 8 or 9 just because, you know, we think that an injury at this age is going to completely derail his career. That's why you have doctors. And there are some teams, apparently, according to reports, their doctors are saying, don't go anywhere near him. There are other teams' doctors saying, this isn't that big a deal. If you're going to have back surgery, which you never want, but if you're going to have it, that's the one you want to have, because that's the one that's easiest to recover from, and you can generally do it between 8 and 12 months. Well, he had the surgery. By the time training camp started, it'll be 12 months. So that's all I'm going by, and when I see that kid on the court, I go, he looks the part. But, again, we haven't seen him play.
If Memphis stays at number four, I'm going to say Jaren Jackson. That would be the perfect fit for the team. If they trade with Chicago, I wouldn't mind taking the 7 and 22nd pick and then selecting Trae Young with that pick. So that's where I would – I'm going to go with that direction.
I think that's fair. I think they like Wendell Carter too. I think I wouldn't be surprised if it was 7 and 22 and it turns out to be Wendell Carter and Khyree Thomas. So if they're interested there or people along those lines. And then they have a decision at 32. You know, this team did a really good job last year using excess picks to get into the second round and grab Ivan Rabb and Dylan Brooks. There's a couple of kids in that late first round, early second round, depending on who goes where, that could be available that could really help this team. And will they be willing to buy a later second-round pick? If they look on the board at 42 or 43 and see, say, a Javon Carter, where they've had a need for a consistent backup point guard for years, and Javon Carter from West Virginia, who is a defensive nightmare seemingly, just ask Trae Young, is on the board and you decided not to go Trae Young, I would have no problem if they bought in there too. So this tonight, to me, Johnny, really starts after one, seeing if the Kings indeed take Bagley. If they do, then we're going to, in 5 minutes from that time that they announce Marvin Bagley, we're going to find out real quick what Atlanta's doing, and that'll tell us a lot.